Hour two of First Up, powered by 2for1pizza.com. Aaron Korolnik, Carlo Colaiacvo. Just when you thought it couldn't get any worse for the Toronto sports fan. The Leafs are out. The Jays, oh, terrible. Chad Kelly, the reigning most outstanding player in the CFL, gets a minimum 9-game suspension from the league.
So it could be more?
Yeah, it could be more. For gender-based violence is what they termed it. A violation of the league's gender-based violence policy, I should say. And that was a big surprise. We were on the golf course yesterday when that came down from Dave Naylor, who'll join us later. And I was like, wow, that's a big suspension for Kelly. So the CFL did an independent investigation, and they deemed that whatever Kelly is alleged to have done was serious enough to, I guess, give that type of suspension to him.
Yeah, seriously inappropriate, right?
So, according to the CFL anyway. So that's tough for the Argos, man. They had such a great run last year. They're the best team in the league, scoring a ton of points. Incredible buzz down at BMO Field. Then that playoff game where they sucked against Montreal and got blown out. Kelly had the worst game of his career, and he may never play again in the CFL. That might be it. That might be Chad Kelly's lasting legacy. A season in which he's incredible in the regular season, goes out in the playoffs, and lays one of the biggest stinkers in the history of Canadian sport, and that's not hyperbolic. He had 9 turnovers in that game.
Yeah.
So
now it's saying that he won the MOP last year too, right?
Yeah, correct.
Wow. So what a turn of events for Kelly, for the Argonauts, for the CFL, because, you know, obviously, you know, Kelly at his best is a good thing for the CFL, but clearly what he's been accused of is a serious thing, and the CFL is taking action. And I guess my question to you is, AK, what would be next for the Argos? Like, who would be the guy replacing Chad Kelly at quarterback this season?
So they've got a guy named Cameron Dukes, who was their backup last year, who played a little bit when Kelly was rested down the stretch when the Argos had clinched everything, and they're just playing safe with him. And he's probably fine, but you're talking about a steep drop-off from Kelly, who is the best player in the league consistently, to a guy who's very unproven. And there's the speculation around Nathan Rourke, who was claimed on waivers yesterday by the New York Giants, so it doesn't sound like he's going to be an option for the Argos. I think they are just screwed, really. And it's
really,
it's no one's fault except their quarterback, who they relied upon to not do stupid things and get himself in trouble once again. And that's exactly what's happened here. It's really unfortunate. Kelly's a guy who trouble has followed a long time now, going back to his days in college, his days in the NFL, and now in the CFL. A lot of wasted talent, man, and a lot of money and notoriety lost just based on stupid decisions and irresponsible decisions. It sucks.
And like, honestly, like, even just some of the other stupid decisions we're seeing other athletes make, like this Rashee Rice situation in Kansas City.
God.
This guy's coming off of a season where he took over the number one wide receiver spot for the Kansas City Chiefs, won a Super Bowl, and has just been completely idiotic in the offseason. You know, obviously getting himself arrested for stunt driving,
street racing.
He was probably going to get a suspension for that, and that they're still waiting for that to come down. And now yesterday, being accused of assault, I just don't see how this guy makes it out of this season, or even if we see him play again in the NFL. I really don't.
And depending on how those criminal charges go from that street racing, remember, he hurt a lot of people. Like, there were injuries that people suffered, kids suffered as a result of his moronic behavior, criminal behavior. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And you just wonder how you get to a point like that where everything is given to you. You are a star NFL player for the Kansas City Chiefs. You have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. You could write your own ticket. You could be making tens of millions of dollars a year if you just keep your nose clean and stay out of trouble instead.
And act professional. Like
just being an idiot.
Yeah.
Idiots. So
it's really sad to see some of these players, you know, waste their career away.
Yeah.
With decisions like that.
And think about the opportunity and think how many people would kill for it. And then you just go out and do things so irresponsible. And, you know, Kelly is a little bit of a different circumstance. But, I mean, both of these guys are in some serious trouble here. And, I mean, I don't really know where this goes from here. Again, we'll talk to Dave Naylor coming up in the fourth hour of the show about Kelly and his future in the CFL, if there is a future in the CFL. Yeah. Last night in the Stanley Cup playoffs, what a game between New York and Carolina, which went to double overtime. Double overtime. The star of the game was Igor Shesterkin, who is a playoff monster. That's now 29 straight games in the Stanley Cup playoffs, allowing 4 goals or fewer, which doesn't sound like the craziest stat, but it's the second most all time. So that's a long stretch here of really quality hockey from Igor Shesterkin, which is what we expect from him. He's definitely one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. And think about some of the goaltending performances we've already seen in these playoffs. I mean, Jeremy Swayman has been the star of these playoffs for the Boston Bruins with a .956 save percentage so far through 8 games. Game 2 of that series goes tonight, but double overtime, man, your legs are getting heavy. Vincent Trocheck scores the winner. He played more than 35 minutes last night as a forward.
Yeah.
Can't imagine him waking up feeling too good this morning. But the Rangers are up 2-0 on Carolina. I don't think anyone really saw that coming, but I don't think the Canes are done at all. Both those games have been very, very close. Wouldn't surprise me at all if Carolina holds serve over the next two, and we see 7-game thriller.
Yeah, and look, Carolina's been a really good home team, right? They have that home ice advantage with that crazy crowd in Carolina, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see a home series here right till game 7. And then, you know, when you get to game 7, anything can happen. But some exciting hockey we're seeing in round two of the playoffs, where you would expect the longer you go, the things would tighten up a little more. And we saw more of the tight play in the first round of the playoffs with all these low-scoring series. I mean, to watch teams in the second round, okay, the Boston Bruins put up a 5 spot. Florida surprisingly put up only 1. But the series with the Rangers, we've seen 7 goals in both of the games. We saw 7 goals to open up Dallas and Colorado. Edmonton and Vancouver get things kicked off tonight. To sit here and see all these teams have all their star players contribute on a nightly basis, and you just sit back and reflect on the Maple Leafs postseason again, where it was such a struggle to score 1 goal in a game, and think to yourself, like, they're not that close at all.
Let's look at Colorado and Dallas, right? So, Colorado, Cale Makar, goal, 2 assists. Nichushkin scored. McKinnon scored. Rantanen, 2 assists. Dallas, Jamie Benn makes $9.5 million. Wyatt Johnston, unbelievable performance so far. Pavelski, Heiskanen, Robertson. You know?
Say all the big names on the score sheet.
All the big names. And the same applies to Carolina and the Rangers. Gensel scores twice for Carolina. Sebastian Aho has 3 assists. Lafreniere has 2 goals. Trocheck goal and assist. Kreider, Panarin. It's the best players performing in the big moments for the best teams. And for Toronto, that doesn't happen ever. So 12 goals in 7 games for the Leafs, and their big boys just didn't step up the way you hope.
Like, again, like, you sit there and reflect, they scored 2 goals or less in 6 of the 7 games in this series. The 1 goal they scored, 3 they won. And because of how much of a struggle it looked like for the Maple Leafs to score goals, and now I know against Swayman, and it'll be determined as to who Swayman really is through the course of this series in Florida. I expect Florida to bounce back tonight and even the series. But, I mean, you just sit there and you say to yourself, how the heck can anybody on this Maple Leafs brass honestly sit there and reflect this series and say to themselves, the Maple Leafs are close? How? I know that's a belief that you want to, in, you know, have in your mind and ingrain in your mind, but, like, how can you sit there and honestly believe that? How are you, if you can't score and your special teams struggled as mightily as the Maple Leafs special teams did, how can you say you were close? Well, because the series went to 7 games again, you lost in overtime? You couldn't score 2 goals in game 7. That's all you needed was 2 goals to score in game 7. You would have won that game. And you couldn't find a way to do it.
I don't know if you heard Chris Pronger last night in Overdrive, but I thought it was really illuminating his perspective on the Toronto Maple Leafs and their problem. I think they asked him, like, what did you make of how the Leafs went down and why it went down the way it did? And he had a very simple answer. It was the allocation of how they spend their money up front with the core four forwards, now all making more than $10 million a year. And as a byproduct of that, they don't allocate any of their resources on the back end to the lower parts of their forward group or in goal. And when you have situations that arise, like injuries to Matthews and Nylander, to overcome that is very, very challenging. And they weren't able to do it this year. They haven't been able to do it in past years. So are they really going to give us the same look again next year with Marner and Tavares and Matthews and Nylander and Riley? Now, it's easier said than done to be like, they need to break it up and do this and do that because there are the no movement clauses. And I don't think anyone wants to see a world in which Mitch Marner, let's say the Leafs go to him and Marner's like, I'll go here and here, and the offers from those teams are trash and you make your team way worse. That's not going to help you.
Well, here's the thing, AK. I know a lot of people want to make a big deal of the way the Maple Leafs are constructed. Yes, four players make over 50% of the salary cap. But so much of that conversation is going to change right now because of the cap going up and there's going to be more money into the system. You're going to see more teams have big-priced players on their team like the Maple Leafs do. The problem with the Maple Leafs is they did it in an era in a flat-cap world. And some of their other, you know, money that was allocated elsewhere wasn't spent properly. Like, TJ Brody at $5 million the last 2 years hurt the team, then more than helped the team. Right? John Klingberg, you bring in a guy like John Klingberg, didn't work. You know, Bertuzzi and Domi took a while to find their footing with this team, but ultimately, at the end of the day, they were great pieces to this team. They got above-average goaltending from a $3 million goaltender in Ilya Samsonov, and Joseph Woll was a $700,000 goaltender. Like, they still had the pieces, you know, even though the players that we always talk about, the core four guys, make so much money. Look, I think if you ask any team in the league if they had the opportunity to have that type of talent allocated to four players on the rosters, everybody would take it. The problem is with this Maple Leafs team, and we've been saying it for at least the last couple years, no one's denying that these four players are really good players. It's probably some of the best in the league.
Three of them, yes.
Okay. The problem with these four players is that they've continued to show us year after year the combination of the four of them hasn't been able to work.
Yeah,
Simple as that.
And you make 40-plus million between the four of you guys. If you don't play like it, yeah, the allocation's going to look really bad. But if Matthews was playing like a 69-goal player and Mitch Marner was playing like a 100-point producer and William Nylander, when he had 98 points this year, I thought he acquitted himself just fine. I wouldn't blame Nylander. And Tavares, say what you will, he's just not at the caliber of those guys anymore.
But, AK, last year in the first round against Tampa, it worked.
It did.
It worked. And you saw the result. Last year against Tampa, all four guys led the way in scoring. I think all of them had over 10 points in that series against Tampa in six games. And it worked. The problem is, it hasn't worked consistently. It's actually only worked once. The one time it worked, they won a playoff series. The other seven times it didn't work, they lost. Simple as that. So I don't know how much more you need to see evidence of the combination of these four guys together are just not capable of getting the job done. They're all really great players. They all earned the contracts that they got. But results speak for themselves, man. Simple as that.
Team sport, you got to all pull together. And that's an Argos reference. And that's something the Toronto Maple Leafs just have not been able to do.
If I was a GM, I wouldn't necessarily want this type of formula on my roster. But this is the road they decided to choose. And now they have to find a way to make it work.
Yep, and that could be a number of different ways. Maybe the removal of the coach. Maybe they find a way, force a way for a trade of a guy like Marner or Tavares. We'll get Frank Corrado's take on that for Leafs Breakfast in 30 minutes or less. We'll play Bang or What on the other side. And we'll talk about the Hart Trophy finalists, which did not include a Toronto Maple Leaf, which I thought was quite interesting. That is next. We're back here on First Up, hour number two of the show. Frankie Corrado in about 25 minutes. Chrissy, don't worry about the Bang or What sting. We're just going to get right into one of our favorite segments on Wednesday mornings. But before we begin, a huge bang to our man, Derek Trouba, who celebrated a big B-Day yesterday on the golf course. And a shout out to his kids, Amelia and Juliet as well.
Yes.
What a father they've got. A true class gentleman, a terrific individual, and a hell of a golfer as well. So shout out to the entire Trouba clan.
Fun day yesterday. Fun to get out with him and you and our other buddy, Ryan Kay. So it was good.
Oh, what a stud, Ryan Kay. Huge fan. Yes. Huge fan. Huge Leaf fan, Ryan Kay. Down to Boston for game number seven with a full Leafs jersey on, the full garb. That's a brave individual, a very brave individual. Another man celebrating a birthday yesterday is our producer, Cam, who hosts Bang or What. What are we talking about today, Cam?
Yes, sir. And, AK, you alluded earlier about a certain Toronto Maple Leaf who had an insane season, but was not yet named to the Hart nominees. Auston Matthews should have been named to the Hart Trophy nominees. Bang or what?
What? Mm. I mean, look, he had an incredible season, one of the best seasons we've seen in our lifetime, 69 goals. But the three guys in front of him had great seasons too. You know, you talk about Kucherov leading the league in scoring. MacKinnon, some of the greatness that he showed this year, second in scoring. That home streak that he had going on, he scored 50 goals this year. Connor McDavid, 100 assists. I get Auston Matthews had a great season, but who does he take out of that?
McDavid out. He should take McDavid out. Matthews was a Selke Trophy finalist.
Yeah,
so he's one
and
of the
Lady
top
Bing
three. Yeah, Lady Bing. I mean, yeah, sure. But Selke Trophy, one of the top three defensive forwards in the NHL, and he scored 69 goals, and he wasn't nominated for the Hart. How does that make sense? And I know McDavid had 100 assists, but
McDavid also helped lead the Oilers back from last place in the NHL in November.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's close. I'm not saying it's obvious that Matthews should be in there over McDavid, but I would have given him the nod. We'll find out what Frankie thought. I think he's a voter on that. So
Frankie's a voter?
I'm quite sure he is. Yeah.
No.
So I think he told me that he was. I'm pretty sure he was. Anyways, he'll join us. We'll ask him.
Wow.
I wonder how he put his ballots out. We'll find out when he comes up during Leafs Breakfast. What's next?
Before that, I just wanted, if Matthews got 70, would that have changed the conversation?
Yes.
It's one goal, but like the milestone there as well?
Yeah, it would have. No,
I would
stupid
have.
That it would, but yes, it would have for sure.
One goal would have, because we're talking about 70.
Mm-hmm.
It's you're at it. You put yourself in a different tier when you hit 70. I know it sucks to say because it's one goal, but yeah, I've always said 70 gets him in the Hart.
No, he doesn't win the award with 70.
No. Gets him in
the nominee.
Hart.
Yeah, yes. And I think if McDavid finished with 99 assists, he'd probably be out as well.
Right.
Right. Or Kucherov. Right. Well, no, I think Kucherov's probably in regardless because he won the Art Ross and had 140-something points or whatever it was. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Coming off a great 50-plus save performance in an overtime win, Igor Shesterkin is the best goalie in the NHL.
I don't think there's an argument towards that. I'm going to say, bang, Igor Shesterkin is. Look, go back 2 years ago. 2 years ago, it was Shesterkin's performance that brought the, it was 3 years ago, that brought the New York Rangers to the conference final, where they had a 2-0 lead in that conference final and then lost 4 straight to the Tampa Bay Lightning as Tampa marched their way to a 3rd straight Stanley Cup final, ultimately losing to Colorado. Last year, Shesterkin wasn't his best. I mean, he got out-dueled by Akira Schmid in New Jersey. But this year, President's Trophy winning team, the Rangers haven't lost a game in the playoffs this year. They're 6-0. They swept Washington, and they got the first two against Carolina. Carolina's no pushover. So Absolutely. Best goalie in the NHL right now, Igor Shesterkin.
Yeah, I mean, Hellebuck's going to win the Vezina Trophy, but you can't tell me you'd rather have him than Shesterkin in a playoff series, that's for sure. Considering everything we've seen from Hellebuck and everything we've seen from Shesterkin, I'm with you. It's a bang.
Yeah, did you see Shesterkin snap yesterday when he got hit behind the net by Svechnikov?
Yeah. He dove. He was like, remember when Max Domi kind of nicked Swayman a bit, and he's like, whoa, falling back and pretending
got shot. Commercial timeout, yeah.
I think Shesterkin kind of did a similar thing. He was playing it up, and they were pissed. And whatever, they got it done. Svechnikov knew exactly what he was doing. He also got a two-minute penalty for that. Domi was not penalized for Swayman's dive, fortunately.
The Oilers and Canucks series gets started tonight. The Oilers will win the series in less than five games or less.
I'm going to say what to this one. Look, I don't know why Vancouver is getting so disrespected in this series. I get it. Chylov is in net. Not a lot of people have faith in him, but he helped them win three games.
Against Nashville.
And look, Nashville was way more offensively challenged than anything Edmonton is going to present to them. But Vancouver's got home ice. If you win in five games or less, that means you're winning two or more games on the road or in Vancouver, which, I mean, I know is possible. I just have a hard time thinking that it'll happen. I think this will go six or seven games.
I'll say bang, Edmonton in five, and I think it starts tonight. Shelovs, come on. I think McDavid and Draisaitl are salivating at the prospect.
Vancouver was 4-0 versus Edmonton this year.
That's true. Boston was 4-0 against Toronto. They beat the Leafs.
Boston was 4-0 against Florida this year.
Yeah, that's right, and they're up 1-0. They play game two tonight, but playoffs are a different beast. Wasn't Winnipeg 3-0 against Colorado?
They were, and
bang.
They got dummied by Colorado.
They did.
Speaking of goaltending performances, how about Georgiev? Or Gorgiev, whatever you say his name.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's bounced back in a serious way since getting lit up in game one of that series. So shout out to him. Go ahead, Cam.
It looked awful early for Gorgiev. Everything was getting past him, and then he was excellent.
All three goals were deflected, though.
Yeah, I know. Wyatt Johnston. Oh, I hate to give Al's brother any type of kudos, but that kid is a stud.
He is.
A stud.
$12 million in his next contract.
Probably at least.
The big winners from last night's draft lottery are the San Jose Sharks selecting first overall. San Jose and Macklin Celebrini, they're a perfect match.
So I'm going to say bang to this. And I'm going to give it a really big bang because the San Jose Sharks, for the first time in their history, now get to select first overall. And how ironic their first pick actually gets to be a homegrown kid. Like, Celebrini grew up in California, played for the Junior Sharks. His dad lives in California. You know, he's a member of the Golden State Warriors staff. So I think for that reason, it's a perfect match. I feel bad for Celebrini because I don't think the San Jose Sharks are anywhere close to being good or competitive anytime soon. But when you talk about, you know, the story behind, hey, this kid grew up a San Jose Shark, a homegrown talent, to me, that's a perfect match.
Totally with you. I love the story. It's a cool idea, and we'll see if it actually happens. And there's a lot of pressure on this kid. He's the number one overall pick. What exactly is he? Is he a future superstar? Remains to be seen. Ton of talent, no doubt. But the fact that he's got ties to the area, San Jose is really, really rough. And it's going to be a long time. I'm with you. Until they're good, I love the fit for Celebrini and San Jose. Bang.
Last one I got here. Keeping on the Celebrini track, Canada should have kept Celebrini and Fantilli over picking up Pierre-Luc Dubois, Brandon Hagel, and Nick Paul.
So I'm going to say, what? Excuse me. What? To that one. I was dry throat on that one. Oh, I swear, 20 fingers, if you clip that and you played it the rest of the show, I'm going to slap you so hard with my Italian backhand.
Do it, Chrissy. Do it.
Anyways, I'm going to say what to this one because,
Look, Brandon Hagel and Nick Paul are some serious players that you're adding to that group. And this is no shot at Fantilli or Celebrini because I think they're two fantastic young players. Fantilli hasn't played much the second half of the season. And Celebrini, like, he's got a lot coming for him right now with the NHL draft and the combine and stuff like that. And I think Brandon Hagel and Nick Paul make Canada better right now and make them give them a better chance to win right now than having those two guys in there. And you notice I didn't say Pierre-Luc Dubois on this because I still don't understand that move. If that move meant that one of these two young players had to come off, then yeah, it's a terrible move. But adding Hagel and Nick Paul to that roster is a huge boost for that Canadian team.
Yeah, there's some loaded rosters in the World Hockey Championships, which begin on Friday, correct?
Correct, yes.
Puck drop. We'll talk to Mike Johnson tomorrow live from Czechia, where the tournament is taking place, which is also where you played your World Hockey Championship.
No, I was in Slovakia. Right?
Oh, Slovakia, yes. I knew it was a Kia at the end of the country. I just didn't know which one. I'm with you. Paul and Hagel, I have no problem with being on the team, of course. Pierre-Luc Dubois over Celebrini. I don't feel great about that. It would have been cool to see Celebrini playing on that team, getting that experience, the international experience and the exposure with the guys. But I also understand the logic behind it. I'm sure Rick Nash and company are looking at it and saying Pierre-Luc Dubois is a better hockey player than Macklin Celebrini is right now, or Adam Fantilli right now. And we want the best possible roster in an effort to win the tournament. So it makes sense. Bang. And I don't love it, though. Dubois is quickly becoming one of the most disliked players around the NHL.
It's
by
his own
everybody.
Fault.
Well, he's playing terribly. He signed a huge contract.
Not just that. He's a guy that pouted his way out of two situations.
Well, and you saw his comments at the end of his run with the LA Kings, too, where he basically blamed the coaches for his poor play. Oh, I was on so many different lines. I couldn't get anything going. Yeah. And there's no continuity. There's no chemistry. It's like, dude, that shouldn't be a problem. You're paid like a number one.
You're put on different lines because you're not playing good.
Well, and that. What do you have? 30 points this year? You didn't do anything.
If that.
So yeah, I don't love it. What I do love is our collection of guests coming up in the next hour, which include Frank Corrado in about 10 minutes. Ryan Hollins. We'll talk all things NBA with him, including Jamal Murray, who somehow avoids a suspension for throwing a heating pad at an official.
What?
I think
excuse me. 20. What the?
I did not ask him to do that, Coach.
Yeah,
I swear to God. That was all him. One more time.
What? Excuse me. I love your reaction after that. You always have this reaction when I make a stupid sound, and you're like, I can't believe you did that.
I wasn't like that. It wasn't as bad as your Sean Sharania sound. Which
exactly.
We'll
you, and the thing with it, you hung me out to dry like Schneider hung out Manoa to dry on his first appearance.
I didn't know how to say Sean's name either at the time, but now I do.
Yeah.
At the time, I wasn't going to be like, oh, here's actually how you say it.
You know, Shams Sharania. How do you say his name? Sharania.
That's the first help.
Shams Sharania.
Oh, the third help.
I didn't know.
I didn't know. Sure you
so
didn't
I,
know.
All right. I do know how to say Frankie Corrado.
Your name's not Scotty. Your name's AK.
Yes.
Scotty's the only guy who doesn't know. If you know
bad.
What I'm referencing.
Not bad. I do. What's that, Eurotrip? Is that the movie?
Is it Eurotrip? Yes, it is Eurotrip.
Isn't that Matt Damon who sings that song?
It is,
too?
Yes.
Which is really weird. Scotty doesn't know. That's a good song. Maybe we'll play that coming back on the other side. Again, Ryan Hollins is coming up at 8:15 as well. And we'll talk to Scotty Hartnell at 8:45. We'll get his thoughts on the Leafs and where they should go from here. All that to come.
So I'm going to say, what? Excuse me.
So we're talking about Eurotrip. Great movie. Great movie. If you haven't seen it, we encourage you to do so. Although I will tell you that Rotten Tomatoes has it at 47% approval rating.
What?
I don't
what?
Understand.
What? That's horrible.
That is a ridiculous rating for a quality film. Now, we were talking about Matt Damon in the last segment, and you may be wondering, why did Matt Damon cameo in that movie. I mean, the guy was a superstar already.
He's the guy singing that song.
He is the guy singing the Scotty Doesn't Know song. Apparently, the screenwriters were his college best friends, and Damon was filming a movie in Prague alongside the Eurotrip filming. So they just asked him to step in. Hey, come on in, pretend you have a great
Matt
voice.
Matt Damon's look was a rock star. He had tattoos everywhere. Yeah. Like
a nose ring, I believe.
Yeah.
It was a good look for Matt Damon.
So
Scotty Doesn't Know.
Speaking of Scotty Doesn't Know, my boy Derek Truba, who we celebrated his birthday yesterday, his brother-in-law is Scott Dixon. Scott Dixon is my golf partner on all course tournaments that we have at Rattlesnake. Me and him just clean up because we're that good.
Okay.
And so his name is Scotty. His Scott Dixon is his name. And that's the song we always play, like when he misses a putt or when he says something that's funny or something. It's the joke between all of us. We start singing Scotty Doesn't Know from the song.
Nice. So, yeah. I like that.
I say the same thing with our boy Lotz. Scott
Lawton, yes. Scott Lawton, Philadelphia Flyers. Yes. Is he on the World Hockey Team? World Hockey Championship team?
No, he's not.
Really?
Yeah.
Should have been. Should have been the captain.
He was last year, I think he was.
That's right. I remember. Yeah. Got to tee it up with Scott Lawton this year. Got to go head back to Glen Cairn and see if he can beat his 71 that he fired that day a number of years ago.
Let's hope he brings the 71 to my member guest that I continue to bring to him every year.
Yes, I have a good feeling about this year for you and Scott Lawton and the member guest. Also a good feeling about our next guest. His name is Frank Corrado, TSN hockey analyst. He joins us on the other side for Leafs Breakfast. It is indeed Leafs Breakfast here on First Up. You're listening to TSN 1050. We'll welcome Frankie Corrado, TSN hockey analyst, the show in just a moment. 48 hours away until management speaks. After the players spoke on Monday, Tree Living, Shanahan, and Keith Pelly, the new CEO of MLSE, will speak on Friday. Maybe we'll get some clarity on the future of guys like Sheldon Keefe today, tomorrow, or maybe it'll be at that press conference. But let's get some clarity on all things around the National Hockey League with our good friend, TSN hockey analyst, Frank Corrado. Hello, Chesko. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing? You guys playing lots of golf? I see you guys.
Tons. Carlo and I were having the greatest time ever. I guess Carlo has kids, but they're older now, so he's out there and about. Me, childless, you, changing diapers and feeding your kids all day long. Yeah. But that's how it goes.
It's all good. We miss you, buddy.
We miss you. We got to get out for a round.
Yeah, I think 10 years, you'll be able to get out, Frank. I think so.
Perfect. Yeah.
Ahead, Frankie, before we move, we touch on things all Maple Leafs. AK suggested in the previous segment when we were talking about the Hart Trophy nominees, he suggested that you actually have a vote. Is that true?
That is correct, yes. I voted this year.
What? How did you get... Oh, dog! Jeff O'Neill doesn't even have a vote
How did you get in there? Goes all across North America.
Listen, man, you know how it is. You know, moving and shaking.
I'm blown away impressed. Like believe me, like I value your opinion. I appreciate your vote. I'm wondering how you got the nomination to actually have a vote versus other guys that have been in the industry for so long that haven't.
Listen, I got people, I got sources. It's just
I don't know what else I can tell you
other than that. But
Carly, you do know Frankie's nickname, right? I mean,
I know. Yeah,
we know it was probably.
You know what? It makes all the sense in the world now. Yep. It makes all the sense in the world now.
With the Hart Trophy voting and the three nominees were announced yesterday. It will be MacKinnon, Kucherov, and Connor McDavid. Is that how your ballot looked, Frank?
Yes, not in that order, but those would have been my top three, and I would have had Austin Matthews at four, and I think I had Artemi Panarin at five. So, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of ballots that come out with Kucherov, MacKinnon, and McDavid in the top three, just depending on what you value, what impacts of the game you think are more valuable to each team, that'll kind of vary the order of those. But, that's how my top three look.
That's impressive, buddy. That would have been my top three. Who did you have number one? You said that you didn't have him in that order. What order? Can you reveal what order you had or no?
I had Kucherov at number one. Okay. I just think the discrepancy between himself and the next best player on his team points wise was really hard to ignore, and the fact that you know how much offense was driven through him. You know, 50% of the offense on Tampa Bay goes through him. And, you know, in the spirit of the award, it's the most valuable player to his team, taking everything into account, what McDavid did, what MacKinnon did, even what Austin Matthews did. Nikita Kucherov was the most valuable to his team. So he was my number one vote.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Well, let's
Hart Trophy voter, Frank Corrado.
Did you vote on everything else, too, or just the Hart?
So it would have been Hart, Selke, Lady Bing, Calder, and then the All-Star teams. The thing is, though, you got to make sure you fill out your ballot correctly, or else your whole thing is invalid. So that's, you know, I hope I filled it out correctly. That's the only thing. I think if you put in like the wrong position of a player, like if you're doing the top three right wingers and you have a right-handed winger who plays left wing, who's listed as a left wing, I think that makes your thing invalid. You have to be pretty careful. That's half the battle.
So Frankie, there's been a lot of time here since the Maple Leafs last game and obviously us speaking to you, and I'm curious to know what your reaction was since the time they lost and to today, on based on some of the things that you've heard the Maple Leafs players address and say. And we don't need to get into Mitch Marner's God comments anymore, but if you've listened to us the last couple of days, the one thing that still bothers me about this group is that some of the players come out and they don't take ownership for their play. It's almost like they keep reminding us how close they are and that they still believe in themselves and that they're still believing that they're Stanley Cup contenders. I don't buy that, especially when no player comes out and takes ownership with their own play. What was your reaction to some of the stuff that you heard come out of the Maple Leafs land?
Yeah, I don't have an issue with players believing in themselves. Ultimately, you have to have belief in yourself if you're going to do anything special, and that's what they're trying to do. It would be nice, you know, or refreshing or different for one of those guys to just come out and say, like, we're just flat out not good enough, and you know it starts with me or it starts with us, and we need to do this and we need to do that. Like it just feels like it's very kind of vanilla, rehearsed, and you know somewhat defensive, and that's what would rub certain Leaf fans the wrong way. The fact that it's like, okay, you've said that already. Like you said that last year. You know, when do you finally kind of, as you know, if you're watching that as a fan, you look at it and say, When do you guys finally snap a little bit and you know change the tone? And that's not really happening, or that hasn't really happened. I thought Morgan Riley's comments were outstanding. Like I thought he was
real.
The best.
He was real.
Yes, he was honest and genuine, and he said, he goes, well, I'm not going to tell you that we're right there because you can't. But I thought he showed a lot of the leadership that people are looking for out of that group. Kudos to him. He's obviously been here a long time. He's seen the ups and downs. He's seen a lot of players come and go, like different regimes come and go. And, I think my feeling now, Carlo, as opposed to, you know, from this year, as opposed to other years, is something will happen now. Like, I feel like we're getting close to probably having some closure on this era. And I think that the term run it back just is not in the vernacular anymore for this group and this team. Like there's going to be something or something significant that happened. And I think that's only a good thing because it clearly hasn't worked and they need to do something different.
What do you think that something is?
Well, it has to be one of the core pieces moving on. And it's not Matthews. It's not Nylander. So, you know, there's only two players there that it really makes sense. It's obviously going to be very complex, but there's just, this is the reality of where they're at. If they had won, if they had had success, you know, you'd be saying that, all right, we're going to push for another final. We're going to get to the conference final next year. We know that because we've been there. Like, you can't say that anymore. So it's clearly not worked. They need to find a way to get away from this cap structure that doesn't work. And, you know, like, there's just, it comes down to two guys. It comes down to two guys that make $11 million, both have 1 year left on their deal. One guy, you would probably not be re-signing to an extension. I don't know. I would imagine that's John Tavares. And the other guy in Mitch Marner, who is going to ask for a lot of money. And so, I don't know, maybe you start making your plan a little sooner here as far as, you know, what that exit strategy looks like. But that's the reality. Whether, you know, his camp wants to hear it or not, that's what it's come to. Because Nylander's here to stay, Matthews is here to stay, and in order to shake up the core four, that means someone has to move, and maybe two pieces have to move. But that's where they've come to now.
So aside from the players, Frankie, do you anticipate that we might see a move behind the bench?
I would imagine. I still I think Sheldon's a good coach, and Sheldon is going to probably move on somewhere else and have success in the NHL. I wouldn't doubt that for a second. You know, based on the fact that you've been around the league, Carlo, and you've seen how, you know, general manager comes in, chances are they want their people there. You know, they want to make their own hires. They want to have things aligned from top to bottom. And, you know, as much as Trey Living gave Sheldon an extension last year, he did inherit Sheldon from Kyle Dubas. So, you know, there is a little bit of that. And maybe with all these, you know, maybe with the changes that happened this year, maybe Sheldon is a, you know, he gets caught in the middle of that, but I still do believe Sheldon's a good coach. But when things haven't worked here, you know, changes are probably on the horizon. And as you can see, like, you know, every year, I think there's six or seven coaching vacancies right now in the NHL. And, you know, there's just, it's so easy to make that move and to fire a coach. And I wouldn't be surprised if that were to happen here.
Look, Frankie, I'm in the same boat as you. I've basically come to the conclusion that everything is on the table. And this is the first time in, you know, when we do reflections on the season that I've actually felt this way. Because in the past, I've always said, I don't believe it's going to happen. I don't believe it's going to happen. But now I'm kind of like, I'm sick and tired of defending the same story over and over again. And I'm kind of like open to the idea of something refreshing. The thing that continues to stop me from that full belief is if Brendan Shanahan is still in charge, and look, he's still got a year left on his deal. There's no reason to believe he won't be in charge. How much of change can we expect with him being the guy that is ultimately involved in a lot of the big decisions? And the other thing that I've suggested to AK this morning is if there was a can't miss guy on the market for a head coach, don't you think this move would have been done by now, considering that we're almost 5 days since the end of the season? I just think that, you know, looking at the player, the people available on the market, I don't think there's a rush to make a move at coach. I know people don't want to hear that, but that's just how I feel.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like an arms race, I guess, to get a new coach in, especially, you know, if you see what, like, you know, Ottawa took their time. Ottawa interviewed a bunch of people. Ultimately, they went with Travis Green, who I think is going to be a good coach for them. But Carlo, like, your point on, you know, Shanny having 1 year left on his deal and, you know, how much change could there be? If you, me and AK, we sit here, we talk about what needs to change with the team, we can all pretty much agree on it. The guys at 4 p.m. on Overdrive, they can all agree on it. You know, thousands and thousands of Leaf fans can, you know, talk to their buddies in the group chat and everyone can agree on it. So how can one person see it differently? And how is that one, like,
that's,
you know,
fair.
What I mean? Like, how, and
that's
how
fair.
Is it the one person that's in charge? So, like, if literally everyone sees it the same way right now, that something needs to happen, and the logistics would tell you, like, there's probably only one or two routes that you can go down. Like, how does the one person not see it? As much as you want to, you know, you make decisions in your career and you want to, you know, double down and say, you know, this was right, this was the right thing to do. You know, Kyle Dubas, like, one thing he was not afraid to do was when he made a mistake, he would look for the exit strategy as soon as possible. And, you know, it sounds like last year he was willing to do something to shake it up. He was instructed that he was not going to be allowed to do that or able to do that. And here we are a year later, and now there's a no move clause that's in the way. So, I mean, it's not going to be any easier this year. It's going to be harder to make that kind of move. But it's probably something that everyone can agree, like, you know, something needs to happen within that group, because you've exhausted all your other options around the group. You have signed countless players, veteran guys, young guys, big guys, slow guys, fast guys, skilled guys. You signed everyone you possibly could around the group. It hasn't worked. So, you know, I think once you say it, fully admit that you've exhausted all your other options around them, probably time to make a change.
Frank, Edmonton-Vancouver, game one tonight in Vancouver, your old stomping grounds. How do you think this series plays out?
I think the Canucks are swimming in shark-infested waters with the Edmonton
wow.
Oilers. Because think about it, like, this is where Edmonton is every year. You can press fast forward on the season, and the Oilers will be here in the second round. And, you know, they get through L.A., and it's like they're trying to get over this hump right now. And Vancouver is, you know, new on the scene, but Vancouver has been really good all season long, and Vancouver has been a victim of the narrative all year. I think coming into the year, there was a lot of people that maybe didn't think Vancouver was a playoff team. That was fair. They proved everyone wrong. And then, you know, as the games went on, Vancouver was at the top of the standings. Oh, PDO, PDO, it's going to come back down to reality. That was, you know, they were the victims of that narrative. Then, you know, we get closer to the end of the season and they're first in the Pacific. And, you know, the narrative kind of becomes, well, you know, they're a sexy pick to be an upset team in the first round because Nashville won all those games and Vancouver hasn't been there before. And now it's like the narrative is, you know, they're in tough against the Edmonton Oilers, which they are. The only thing that they kind of, I look at between Vancouver and maybe Vegas last year was that those defensemen on Vegas, they're big. Vancouver's defensemen outside of Quinn Hughes are big. And Vegas had like really good defensive centermen who could play against the top lines for Edmonton. Like Vancouver, if Pettersson is healthy, which it doesn't seem like he's overly healthy right now, they would be going Miller, Pettersson, Lindholm, Bluger. Like those are four good centermen, like diligent defensive centers. So that would lead me to believe that, you know, it's not just Edmonton running away with things. As long as Vancouver stays disciplined and doesn't take too many penalties and doesn't allow that power play to get to work. But, and Stuart Skinner is going to have to play like the Stuart Skinner that we've seen this year in the playoffs and not last year where he got pulled a bunch of times and, you know, sub 900 save percentage. But, I expect it to be, a good series. Ultimately, I do believe Edmonton wins this series. Vancouver is going to have to find a way to generate a little more offense than they did in the first round against Nashville, where only had 13 goals in six games, because Edmonton will find a way to score goals regardless of how the season series went, 4-0 to Vancouver.
It does sound like the earliest we could see Thatcher Demko is game number five, if Vancouver gets it to game number five. Again, swimming in shark-infested waters, something I hope you never do, Frank. Thank you for doing this. We'll chat with you next week.
All right. See you, boys.
That's Frank Corrado, TSN hockey analyst. This hour, First Up, brought to you by 2for1pizza.com. Order a pizza and wings combo, one large pizza, three toppings, and 10 wings. Only $29.49. Try their new Thai sweet chili wing sauce, 2for1pizza.com. Saw our man Derek eating those wings yesterday after our round of golf. I was jealous.
Really?
I love wings.
I do
wings
too.
Wings are great. Wings are great. Wings and pizza, that combination, doesn't get much better than that.
You know what I did the other day? And went to the grocery store and I bought like the chicken wings myself. Came home, rolled them in a nice homemade spice, salt, vinegar, lemon pepper. Put them in the air fryer. For like 15, 20 minutes. Oh, golden crisp, dude. They were phenomenal.
Oh, that sounds great. I know it's 8 a.m., but I'm ready for some wings right now. Yes. Any wing shops open at 8 a.m. in the morning on a Wednesday?
Boston Pizza should be open.
I don't know about Boston Pizza's open at 8 a.m., but if they are, hooked the fellas up with some delicious wings. Our producer Cam hooked us up with some great guests today, including Ryan Hollins and Scott Hartnell, who both join us in the third hour of First Up, which begins after this.